not gonna lie, I really enjoy that intro. It gets me a little fired up. Hi everybody, Jeff Edelstein here, hosting our Primetime Props Week 10. I start getting a little sad when we get to like this double digit weeks. It's like, man, I'm already thinking about my next year's underdog draft. It's up and down. Joined today, as always, by three smarties: Keith Eister, Justin Bales, and the Looch. And listen, another slate, another group of games. A lot of nice totals when you're looking at this slate up and down, and a lot of not nice totals. It's feast or famine this week. We're going to start with a little bit of famine as we head down to Houston, where the Texans are, to my eyes, a little bit of a surprise, even without C.J. Stroud, who hasn't really been doing that much anyway. 1.5-point underdogs at home to the Jaguars, missing Brian Thomas Jr. this week. And that total is set at 37.5. Not a lot of offense expected in this one, but that has not stopped our own Justin Bales from identifying something that he does like. Tell us all about it, Mr. Bales.
Yeah, there's actually, now that Brian Thomas is out, there's two things that I think I would go for in this disgusting game. Number one, Dalton Schultz. We know that Jacksonville is just atrocious against the tight end. And, Schultz is coming off a big game, got plenty of targets. It's not like he can't still play at a reasonable level. I know that he's kind of up and down for quite some time now, but I think that Schultz is still relatively low receiving yards total, especially considering, like, outside of Nico Collins, who do you trust really in that Houston offense? So I think that he's in a pretty good spot. And then I think you also just kind of look at Parker Washington here. 19 targets over the last 2 weeks. Obviously, Travis Hunter's gone, not gone, but injured. Brian Thomas Jr. just got ruled out. So I don't necessarily know if his role changes that much without Thomas, because it's not like Liam Cohen was running this offense where they just pepper Thomas like crazy. Like, he only had 5 targets last week. It was less than Deami Brown and Washington. Obviously, Jacoby Myers comes in, but on very, very limited practice, are you really trusting him to completely take over? I think that we probably see pretty close to double-digit targets again for Parker Washington. Hate the matchup. Houston has a very good defense. I think this is basically just a volume play where, truthfully, I haven't even looked at his receiving yards or his receptions. It would obviously depend on where those are set at, but I do think that he's going to get quite a bit of volume in terms of the targets.
Yeah, they're keeping him in the slot. That I do know, and they're going to bump Myers to the outside. So I think that's a sign of confidence. I think that they're going to leave him there where he has shown success. We're trying to find his props here while we do that. Mr. Eister, anything in this game that you even want to breathe into the universe?
There really isn't anything that I'm on here. I've got a couple of things in the other two disgusting games, but this mostly stay away from me.
Well, there's his numbers, 4.5 on the receptions. That seems pretty reasonable.
I mean if he's going to get double-digit targets, I think that's pretty sharp.
Yeah.
What an abomination the Jaguars are for DFS and underdog and season-long. Brian Thomas couldn't do wrong in the summer, right? And then he has a case of the drop, sophomore slump, whatever. Travis Hunter finally ascending a little bit, done for the year. Travis Etienne's not even good anymore. He had some cupcake matchups in the first couple of weeks. Man, the Jags are just miserable. I was talking to one of my buddies yesterday. I feel like there's this tier of quarterbacks after the Bo Nix debacle. His stats are ridiculous, by the way. He has like, 10 passing touchdowns against the Cowboys and whatever other team he went off against, and then 7 combined for every other game. There's just this tier of quarterbacks that just kind of seems soft. I don't want to throw Bo Nix in there yet because it's too early, but he's looked bad since week one. But it's just kind of that tier of guys. Kyler Murray, what has he done the last couple of years? He put Jacoby Brissett in that offense and is running better than it has, in the last 20 games. Trevor Lawrence, different coordinators, I get it. So many weapons. There's just a group of guys who are just kind of guys, and I hope Bo Nix doesn't kind of fall into that group of guys that are, what do they call it? Jags, just a guy. Is that what they say? I don't know, man. Like, it's rough, and I don't even know how I feel about Trevor Lawrence anymore. It's just an ugly, ugly team on offense.
But they're favored. I mean, I guess that's the Davis Mills debounce, I suppose. I mean, it's got to be. But it's not, again, it's not like this offense has been humming. you know, with Stroud.
You can take a shot on Davis Mills, I think. I know, obviously, he looked bad last week, but we've seen him in the NFL play reasonably well in the past, and Jacksonville's pass defense is legitimately bad.
Yeah.
I prefer, personally, I mean, obviously, because I outlined it very quickly, but I much prefer just taking the shot on someone like Dalton Schultz, where I don't need a ton of passing yards and whatnot, and, like, Mills can be atrocious and Schultz can still hit. But I do think I think that Mills might be kind of sneaky here.
Yeah, so we saw him last in 2022, and man, I just felt like he absolutely peppered Nico Collins every time he dropped back when he played. I don't know. I don't think it could get much worse for the Texans offense. Like, you know, kind of like the Cardinals situation, and you know, what's the downgrade? Like, it's brutal. So poor Davis Mills gets a run for his life now.
What happens if Mills comes in and goes, you know, 303, all of a sudden now, you know, everyone's talking again. We got another Jacoby on our case. All right, let's get out of this game. It's depressing me. Let's go to a game that's fun. Bears, 4.5-point favorites at home against the Giants. Keith, we'll start with you. You're going back to our number one draft pick here, right?
First round. Yes, sir. Been talking about him way too much the last couple of weeks. The big breakout finally came. Not just the last play when Cincinnati put on the worst display of tackling maybe ever in the history of the NFL. He had, I think it was 5 catches and 65 yards before that broken play. His line is still down at 30.5. Cole Kmet should be back. He has practiced this week. He's out of concussion protocol. So Cole Kmet is back, but it's like, come on. Like, we're sticking with Loveland here, right? Dude just exploded player of the week. He's got to stay on the field here. I think they'll run a ton of two tight end stuff even, but 30.5 is just too low of a line. 2.5 receptions is too low as well. I don't think you can put the Colston Loveland back into the bag is what I'm getting at. And his lines are still suggesting that he's a part-time player. Like, his lines have been around like 24, 26 all season long. And we're only at 30 right now in this spot. And it's a great matchup against the Giants as well. So give me all the Colston Loveland.
You know, Bales, I know you got something here. Yeah, I you know, I mentioned, but you know, our first show together, you know, 8, 9, 10 weeks ago or whatever. So I know what you like here. I know the player. I'm going to see, let's see how much I actually know you. This is a passing plus rushing bet. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I have no issues with that. It's not even a spot where I'm like, oh man, this matchup is so good for his legs, but like Jackson Dart has
every such week
good scrambling ability, and you know, obviously the designed runs and whatnot. Dude, give me this entire game. This game is probably my favorite on the entire slate. I'm really hoping, I know it doesn't look likely, but if DeAndre Swift just doesn't play, man, we have some serious spots to attack. As of right now, Jackson Dart is probably my favorite. You can take his passing and rushing. Realistically, you can also just take his passing. You could take fantasy points if you play on one of the sites that offers the fantasy points and whatnot. I just think this is a really, really good spot for Jackson Dart.
Props to you, sir. I'm the Kyle Manung guy. You jumped in with zero hesitation whatsoever on that last week, and boy, were you right. Dude looked awesome. Cincinnati's defense is obviously just couldn't stop anyone at this point. You were all over Caleb Williams as well. I was a little bit more hesitant on the Bears. I've watched them a little too much, but they got it done against that sorry excuse of a Cincinnati defense. Another great spot for him here this week.
Luch, anything in this game besides everything?
Keith, you talked about it, and I know it's tough to say right now because he had like 40 fantasy points. But Caleb Williams is a guy who, despite the massive game, I still have some reservations about trusting from week to week. Where was Roma Dunze? I mean, like, nowhere. Like, absolutely just frustrating for many bettors and DFS players. Who did Bo Nix have success against? Dallas and Cincinnati. Who has Caleb Williams had his two best games against? Dallas and Cincinnati. Those defenses are on another tier of terrible. Now, the Giants are probably on the next tier up from that. But I don't think they are as bad as Dallas and Cincinnati. So I just, you know, I have a hard time trusting where the volume's going to go from week to week. I understand the Colston Loveland look. It's very low numbers. Like, if I'm going to take pass catchers in this offense, I want to take guys that are talented that have the lowest numbers. Because I, at this point, like, how can you even trust Romo Dunze? I don't know. I'm still not sold on Caleb Williams and this whole thing. And, you know, I hope my MO changes here. But again, he has 12 passing touchdowns this year. 7 have come against the Bengals and Dallas, which means doing my MIT level math here, he's thrown exactly 5 touchdowns against everybody else the rest of the season. So, like, it's so hard to even be confident in taking someone that has a relatively high prop line on the Bears, regardless of the matchup.
I just to throw it out there, I think touchdowns are pretty fluky. And I think you're looking a little too much into the touchdowns. If you look at the Bears' offense, you know, obviously they did indeed destroy 2 terrible defenses, but I think that's more of a Caleb Williams did what Caleb Williams should have done against those versus he only does that. That's fair. 25 against the Raiders, 25 against Washington, 26 against New Orleans. I am not on the side of Caleb Williams as this untouchable quarterback that is dominating the NFL and very good. I am on the side of it's shockingly difficult for young quarterbacks to change coordinators, and Ben Johnson has a very difficult scheme for an offense to learn. Caleb Williams, I think, already looks good in that scheme.
I don't think he looks bad. It's hard to trust for fantasy. Rome is being treated by the industry as the de facto number one receiver, and he has a 21% target share. It's really frustrating for a betting and fantasy asset. I will say where Caleb's value is surprising, not surprising, you know, he's athletic, but we saw more of it this year than last year's, is he providing value with his legs. I mean, he's picking up, you know, 5 or 6 fantasy points alone. And that, you know, if he scores a touchdown, that's where the real ceiling comes into play. So just in terms of like even DFS, like who do you stacking with? I guess you go with the cheap guys, go with Colston Loveland, who might be their best athlete offensively. And we'll see what happens in the backfield with DeAndre Swift and Kyle Manunga. It would be really easy if they just kind of phased out DeAndre Swift, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I am scared that it's going to be a really run heavy game plan. But they're both active. Like I'm talking 35 rushing attempts. Like
Gibbs and Montgomery.
Yeah, that's exactly. Like they've been having a ton of success on the ground. It's another great matchup for that. I don't think they'll have to throw. Maybe they can give it to them each 15 times.
Yeah, I like that idea. Giants have been getting gashed by the run. I mean, you don't want to put Caleb in harm's way of Brian Burns and Abdul Carter too much. I mean, if there's any strength of the Giants team, it's those bookend young pass rushers that they have to build around defensively right now, which, you know, I kind of like Caleb rushing yards the more we're talking about it. If he's going to be, you know, running a little bit for his life behind still an offensive line that's kind of being held together with duct tape a little bit, Keith, maybe not as bad as it was earlier in the season. But you can sell me on Caleb Williams rushing yards, I think.
One really weird thing about New York. Sorry, we are talking about this game way too much, I think. But very quickly, one super weird thing about New York is, dude, that line on paper is crazy and will get ridiculous pressure and whatnot. They rank in like the bottom 7 of the NFL in pressure rate or something. Like they just don't get it. I thought that they were going to destroy, and I thought that obviously you were going to be able to run against them because of the way that they play. That has turned out to be true, but I mean, I think they rank 8th last right now in pressure rate, which feels wrong. I don't know. I'm saying it and looking at it, and I'm even like, man, that doesn't seem right with the names that they have. But I mean, I don't know. I think that defense is just really bad.
Now that we're looking at this as well, I mean, Swift, 48.5 rushing yards. I mean, if he's active, he's destroying that.
You touched on the names, Gibbs and Montgomery. How long did we beg for Gibbs to get the bulk of that backfield? I'm telling you, Swift is coming back to a major role here. If he's healthy, he's going to have a role.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know. That looks real good to me. All right. Bale said we're talking too much about this game, so we're done. That's it. Let's go to Minnesota, where the Vikings are 4.5-point dogs to the visiting and possibly resurgent Baltimore Ravens. Total set at 48.5. And, well, Keith, you think this is a Zay game, huh?
I do. Baltimore going indoors, Lamar back. Zay Flowers is in a spot to eat here. Minnesota's defense did look better for what it's worth. I had way too much Jahmyr Gibbs in fantasy, had way too many Jahmyr Gibbs props. The Minnesota defense looked a lot better, but I think that Lamar being back here is going to elevate this Ravens offense. Flowers should be heavily involved. The Vikings blitz at the highest rate in the league, I believe. Zay Flowers is going to get a ton of quick looks, 5.5 receptions. I really like the over there, and I like the over on 64.5 receiving yards as well.
Bales, anything in this game that you like?
I've initially was looking at like JJ McCarthy passing yards, Justin Jefferson receiving yards, and I can't bring myself to do it. Great matchup for him, but like
he McCarthy looked competent, surprisingly competent.
He looked good last week, and he threw for like 140 yards. Like, what are we doing? I don't know. I think if there's anything I'm taking, it might be Derrick Henry rushing yards. I don't know. I don't know if I'm because of what happened with Jahmyr Gibbs last week, and I don't know. It felt like a fine spot, but I just think that the difference that Lamar Jackson makes in this offense for Derrick Henry is so crazy. I think if I'm taking anything, it's Derrick Henry over his rushing yards, but I can't say I love anything in this game.
You know, the other thing with the Ravens, they're healthy. I think they have zero players on the injury report this week, which is ridiculous considering that like they had like
the whole team.
I think they were missing 9 defensive starters at one point earlier in the season. So, you know, and they've been looking pretty good on defense the last few weeks. I mean, you know, we might have to throw out a lot of the stats that we've been looking at when attacking the Ravens. And McCarthy's still, I mean, this is still going to be his, what, 4th NFL game? You know, I don't know. I worry about the Vikings in this game.
If the Vikings had gotten rolled like we all thought they were going to last week, I would be 100% on board with that the Ravens are just, they're going to blow them out, like 2 touchdowns at least. And Derrick Henry's going way over. But I don't know what the Vikings pulled out of their ass last week. They played the Lions
exactly right,
way, way better than any of us thought they would.
Yeah, well, way better than everybody. You know, I mean, the Lions, remember we said how I said 8.5 points. What are we missing here? And your answer is, well, maybe JJ McCarthy isn't as bad as we think he is, right? But I mean, was there a teaser bet in America that survived the last week? Because take the Lions down to 2.5. I mean, come on, that's the textbook. That's probably reason enough that we should have known that the 8.5 was they just grabbed you. Those damn bookies. All right. Luch, anything here that you're looking at?
You're muted.
Man, the internet here in northeastern Pennsylvania is not kind today. I kind of like the Lamar rushing number, 35.5. I understand, you know, last week they were kind of maybe keeping an eye on him and kind of maybe they told him not to run as much. He still had 5 carries. But they're at the point where they need to do everything to win. I just trying to think this thing through. Brian Flores loves to blitz. I don't think he's going to totally do a 180 on his philosophy. And I think there could be some chaos at the line of scrimmage, which will either force Lamar to scramble, or there could just be a couple of gaping lanes that, you know, help him pick up a chunk or 2 of yards at a pop. I was just looking at some of the quarterbacks that the Vikings played this year. Caleb Williams had 58 rushing yards against them on 6 carries. We saw Justin Herbert go for 62. Jalen Hurts did not have a good rushing game against him. I don't really think he carried the football. But other than that, I mean, they played Jake Browning and Aaron Rodgers, I believe. So not a huge, you know, data sample of athletic quarterbacks. But the fact that Caleb, who we just talked about, ironically, and Justin Herbert, who, you know, was using his legs a little bit more, did a ton of damage on the ground against Minnesota, I think, you know, if Lamar's good to go, it's crunch time for Baltimore to make a move in this division. I mean, we're getting in November now. They got to do what they got to do. So I think that really raises his fantasy ceiling even more than it, you know, that he looked great last week from the pocket, excuse me. But I think his ceiling is immense this week. So I think he makes for a really good stack with Zay Flowers in terms of DFS.
You know, great. By the way, excellent inadvertent porn naming there. Gaping Lane. That's right up there. That works.
Like that?
Starring Gaping Lane. Yeah, I'd watch.
Is that your burner?
It might be. I might create it. Here's a game that is not. It doesn't scream gaping lanes anywhere. The Jets, 2.5 point underdogs against the visiting Browns, 37.5 total. I mean, kind of yuck. I see a lot of handoffs in this game. So let's start with Keith. Who do you think is going to be? Who do you like here?
Yeah, I see a lot of handoffs too. The Jets weren't a great run defense, and now they just traded away their best run stopper in Quinnen Williams. The Browns have shown us ever since Dylan Gabriel took over that they want to do one thing, and that's turn around and hand it to Judkins. He's sitting at 18 and a half rushing attempts is the line. He's carried the ball almost 50 times in the last 2 weeks, 23 and 25 times, I believe. He's just getting massive, massive work. It's what the Browns want to do. I think they're going to be able to do it against the Jets. 18 and a half feels like a number that's way too low for Judkins.
Now, Luch, I know you're on the other side of this game with Breece Hall.
That's correct, but I don't like Breece Hall. I think I like the under. I think
Anders. I saw 65.5
number. You know, narrative or not, the things we know is he objectively wanted to do everything to get out of the Jets organization. He was very vocal on Twitter. I don't know. In terms of Ja Morant, I think Breece Hall also lost the joy of football, at least with the Jets. I mean, the organization does it to a lot of people. That being said, not only do we have that, but the Browns are still an elite run defense. I understand that they want to run the football as much as they can, and he will probably get his touches, but it doesn't mean that they're going to be good touches. The Browns have the highest stuff percentage in the league. They're also allowing the fourth lowest yards before contact per attempt, meaning every back they play, they're hitting them at the line or behind it. Going to be some tough sledding, especially with – are they getting Garrett Wilson back? I know his status might be up in the air. But other than that, I mean, just so much volatility, so much just chaos. I mean, it's got to be weird morale in that locker room, especially after it's obvious that you're straight up tanking and selling the season. So, if Breece Hall had a mediocre matchup, maybe I'd think, okay, maybe he wants to play I told you so. But it's a brutal matchup. He'll get his touches, but I like Breece Hall's unders on Sunday.
Bales, I'll leave the lane gaping for you. Anything that you like here?
Yeah, just Judkins rushing yards. I mean, Keith already nailed it. Like, a bad run defense got worse on top of it. Like, how many games of the season do you go in having the potential where Judkins and Cleveland could be up, like, even 7 points? Right. Like, it's not that many. This is one of them. So I think that they're probably just going to hand it off to him as many times virtually as possible. And, you know, I do think that he's a really good runner. So I feel like Judkins, either his rushing attempts or his rushing yards, both of them make a lot of sense.
I'm looking again at this board in front of us. Mangani has a higher rushing prop than Swift.
Did you see how good he was?
I did. No, I understand that. But, I mean, they're saying that they think – I mean, are they saying it's really going to be – that it's going to be 50-50 split, you think? Because, I mean, that's what – I mean, I take both overs.
When you think about it, like, think about the player. And we begged for years for Ben Johnson to use Jahmyr Gibbs more, right?
Yeah,
except for Swift – is Gibbs,
right?
Manungai is the David Montgomery.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. I don't know if they trust a rookie like that, and like they had to use him last week. But I don't know. He should get at least 50% of the carries. Like in my brain. I'm not saying that's going to happen. For anyone watching, I don't think that.
I'll take the under on 50% from Manungai.
Yeah, I think they.
I think it's going to be 45-55.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for going back to that game. I know we spent 3 hours talking about it. All right, let's go to another, game, I guess. The Panthers, 5.5-point favorites over the visiting Saints, 38.5 total. As far as I'm concerned, there's only one player that anyone's looking at in this game. Do you want to take this one, Bales?
Yeah, I mean, Rico Dowdle is, dare we say, legitimately very good. He looked legitimately good. He's coming off. They finally were like, hey, we're going to give him the lion's share of the carries. He had 25 compared to only 5 for Hubbard. We know what Carolina wants to do. Early in the game, they want to give him the ball and see if they can get a lead or at least control the game. They're going to do that against the Saints. It's not a defense I'm scared of whatsoever. They've struggled against the runs. Dowdle. He's really, really good. I like him a lot. I think that what is he set in the mid 80s, I think, at the moment? Does anyone know? As long as he's mid 80s or lower, this is a spot where I'll take him.
And plus,
I'm seeing 90.5, 91.5.
Oh, so he's bumping. He's bumping up there.
Those are 80, massive numbers. Those are peak Derrick Henry rushing drop lines. Those are
89.5 on FanDuel. Run and get it quick.
But, you know, the Saints, no matter how bad they are, they play fast. I mean, you know, the Panthers are going to get opportunity here. Did you see last week the Saints' time of possession was 16 minutes? It was, like, one of the lowest ever in, like, NFL history.
That is disgusting.
It's crazy, right? And this is, by the way, this is the game that I circled. It's much like the Lions game last week. I'm like, it seems like the – not that the Panthers are anything so wonderful, but it seems like less than a touchdown. I don't understand how any team could be less than a touchdown favorite against the Saints, especially when you're playing at home. So I'm missing something here as well, yeah?
I mean, the Panthers have looked good at times this season. Like, they're on their way to being a decent team. I don't think they're quite there yet. Obviously, the Bills game stands out as them just really stumbling. But, they beat the Packers last week. Like,
yeah, that's in Green Bay.
In Lambeau. Like, right. That's not an easy thing to do. This is a team that is on the rise for sure.
Yeah.
I'm a big Canales fan, so I'm glad for them that they got that win. He's obviously had – not a lot to work with in the past year and a half, but it seems like things are maybe trending in the right direction. That rushing defense has been sneaky good, which, you know, I kind of don't hate Tyler Shuck, which is disgusting. But, you know, as inefficient and bad as the Saints have been, they are passing at a top five neutral rate in the NFL when the game has been neutral. And I would imagine this game will be fairly neutral, ugly, but neutral. I mean, 175.5 is a pretty reasonable number, even for some of the worst quarterbacking in the NFL. I know one of their shiny toys, Rashid Shaheed, is no longer in the picture, which I'm sure we will talk about later, but I think that's a reasonable number for him.
Ugly but neutral is what they used to call gaping lane.
You know what? Sometimes you got to settle for fives and sixes if you can't go to bat and hit the home run, Jeff, you know?
All right, let's go to Miami. This game feels a little trappy for the visiting Bills. They are 9.5-point favorites. Total's a hefty 49.5. Ben, let's start with you. What do you like here?
Yeah, I'm on James Cook. I think this is basically just a spot where, like, Miami at times has been relatively decent against the run. More often than not, they haven't been. And the big thing that they struggle with is they just give up these massive runs. And, James Cook, we've already seen him. He took one 60-plus on the season. He has some 40-plus. Like, there's a lot of juice there. And it feels like a little bit low of a number. I think it's another spot where you can basically take, like, fantasy points, because I would be very shocked if he doesn't find the end zone. I feel like Cook's probably a little chalky type deal here. But, I think that is a really good spot. And then if you want to move off him, Dalton Kincaid is also in a good spot. Miami struggles against tight ends. Obviously, Kincaid has a pretty reasonable role in that offense. So basically, Cook or Kincaid, or I'm pretty much just avoiding this game.
Keith, is there something you like on the Miami side?
There is. I know I want to play Devon Achane, but I'm not positive how I want. I think I want to do it through the air. And receptions is kind of the one that's standing out to me. Unfortunately, that the 4.5 is really juiced. There's plus money on the 5.5. So I'm wavering back and forth on that. I might just play the receiving yards. Seeing 27.5 out there is the best receiving yards line. Buffalo hasn't allowed a ton of yards, but I think the volume is going to be there for Achane in the spot. I don't trust Miami to hand him the ball enough to play the rushing yards. It's a great rushing spot for him, but we're probably looking at like 12 attempts in this spot in a trailing game script. You have to pay a premium to get rushing and receiving yards. That's probably the smart play if you want to cover both bases, but I think my official play is going to be over receiving yards.
All right. Luch, do me a favor. Type in Dulcich. I don't see anything on FanDuel for him. Is there anything floating around? He's my new hero.
I'm glad you brought him up, Mr. Showdown King.
Well, I mean, he played the Darren Waller role, which was valuable, obviously, so, you know, this year.
Well, I mean, it's a Mike McDaniel system. Or dare I say, it's just the system. We go from Jonnu Smith to Darren Waller for a brief time. Dulcich, who you can get around 20.5, and I feel like that's a nice number. You're going to hammer that, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, if I get around to it. But I like it. I like the number, right?
He didn't even put the jersey on yet. What are we doing here?
I'm wearing a gift from my youngest kid, all of Guns N' Roses' appetite. She's 11 years old. She listens to like Motley Crue. She's my favorite kid. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, you mentioned it kind of feels trappy. Nine and a half is such a key number, and I know the books will clean up on that number because you know everybody is hammering the Bills. I saw some numbers earlier about how much money is in on the Bills, and that thing is just not at 10 and a half anywhere. I know it's in Miami, but just a team that has been in total disarray for most of the season too. It definitely feels like it should be a two-score line. So I have my reservations about this one, kind of like yesterday's line too. I mean, obviously it's easy to say now with how bad Bo Nix and Denver looked, but in Mile High, overtime, pretty short week game for the Raiders, and that was their game. That really, you know, they pissed down their own leg and it didn't happen. But I have my reservations about the Bills just straight up running away with this one.
I mean, they're a veteran team, so you would think that they're over it. But again, they come off like a pretty big, you know, emotional home victory. Then you're hitting the road, you're in Miami, where there's, you know, it's not like you're going to Indianapolis. There's some other things to, you know, keep you occupied while in town. And that 9.5 number is just, I feel like it, I'm looking at it now in hindsight, like that Lions number, like they're just begging you to, you know, to take it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And might I just add about that game last night, like it's such a, the Raiders are such a joke, you know, oh, we have a billion rookies active. Well, when you have 50-year-old Tyler Lockett and you're 2-6 and you have a 50-year-old quarterback, you got to pepper Tyler Lockett and give him the reps when you can. Like, why not? I'm being sarcastic, by the way. But, you know, Thornton got some burn after being inactive. It's time to let the young guns go. Jack Beck didn't really play. You know, we'll see what Miami, you know, continues to do. Other than Dolchich, they don't really have a lot of super old players. I mean, Malik Washington is literally fumbling away his chances. He's lost two fumbles in the same game. Was that last week, I think? I mean, just brutal for a guy that they're hoping to see more out of, who is electric at times when he has the ball. But all these things and just the negative stigma and how bad Miami has been, like that 9.5 number is a weird one. Just leave it at that.
That game last night, I think the early contender or late contender for tweet of the year is I'm giving a fantasy football tweet of the year. I'm going to give to Ian Hartitz, if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly. Staring at Brock Bowers, 3.7 fantasy points all weekend is going to be my villain origin story.
We saw last week that they opened the practice window for Aiden O'Connell, and it's just a matter of time. I know Pete Carroll has a love affair with his guys. Geno Smith brought Tyler Lockett back. You know, when Lockett wanted his release from Tennessee, I thought he wanted to go to an actual good team to play meaningful football. Just wanted to play with freaking Pete Carroll and Geno again. I don't get that one. But anyway, Geno is terrible. Aiden O'Connell's season will be here by December, and you really can't get much worse.
All right, let's go to Tampa. The Bucs, 2.5-point favorites, which I think is, I don't know, over the Patriots, the visiting Patriots. Hefty total of 48.5. I struggle with this game looking at it. I feel like it's as likely to be like a 17-13 game as it is like a 37-34 game. I think, you know, I'm confused by this game. Hopefully you guys can set me straight. Ben, I'll start with you. There's a few things that are jumping out, yeah?
Yeah, I'll just start with Tampa. I mean, they obviously are dealing with a ton of injuries. Bucky Irving out again. Their receivers are going down left and right. There's still just an offense they're going to move the ball. Baker Mayfield's really good. They're just going to move the ball down the field. I think the Cade Otton here, his receiving yards are really nice. They're still relatively low, and he's been pretty consistently getting a pretty solid target share, specifically for a tight end. So I think that Cade Otton is the guy to go. New England has a good defense, but they do kind of funnel a little bit to the tight end. That's where they've struggled. So I do think that that's a good spot. On the other side, I think that you more or less just take their offense with Drake May. You can have his pass yards and rushing yards. Tampa, obviously a pass funnel. They've been for, you know, quite some time. They're going to make you throw the ball, but they also give up a ton of yards to quarterbacks on the ground. Drake May he's not the guy that, you know, when you think rushing quarterbacks, he's the number one guy that comes to mind, but very, very solid in terms of scrambling, in terms of, know, the few designed runs that they do and whatnot. So I think that May is probably where I want to go in terms of New England's offense. There's another spot that I also like, but I know that Keith's on it a little bit more than me. So I'll shift this over to him real quick.
Yeah, I am on the passing game with you. And the guy that I want to target is somebody we've been begging to see the field all season long. Ramondre Stevenson out again. Travion Henderson, 75% of the snaps last week without Ramondre Stevenson. The time has arrived. The Bucs have an amazing run defense, so we need to attack them through the air. It's Travion Henderson receiving yards. Travion Henderson receiving yards at 21.5. Give me the over.
I got a question for you. On DraftKings, Henderson's 5,600, as is Menagai. Assuming Swift plays, who do you prefer?
I mean, that's – you're talking about a guy 75% of the snaps versus 75%. That's – that, I mean, I know it's a great matchup for Menagai, right. But
– you go Henderson. Yeah, all right.
I mean, he's going to catch four balls too.
And if Swift's out –
not that Menagai can't, but
– if Swift's out, you go Menagai.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Checks notes. All right. Good. Luch, anything you like here?
No, I love the Henderson receiving yards call. I actually have that highlighted. I that's a really reasonable number. And we know the Tampa Bay funnel that we've all grown accustomed to the last couple of years. I think that could be one catch. I mean, Henderson is electric with the football. So I think that's really awesome. Just if I'm looking for a longer shot here, I kind of like Hunter Henry to catch a touchdown if I'm looking for something with a little bit of longer odds here. He's tied for the team lead with end zone targets. He has 8 targets inside the 20. He plays the most snaps on New England inside the 10 and inside the 5. Just feels like a Hunter Henry game, right? I mean, you're going to have tough sledding running the ball on Tampa, especially in the red zone. Hunter Henry, that big body, my favorite touchdown pick in this game.
All right, let's go to Seattle, where you got to say they're surprising because they are playing some incredible football. Seahawks are 6.5-point favorites. Divisional battle over the Jacoby Brissett-led Arizona Cardinals. 44.5 is the total. Everyone likes a little something here. I'm going to start with Bales because we're going down the depth chart a little bit on this one here. You're looking at these tight ends, huh?
Yeah, I'll start with A.J. Barner. I'm a little surprised with the role that he's having, but he's getting a very solid amount of targets each week. He's absurdly efficient, I think, is the big thing for him. And well, I mean, I guess the entire Seattle pass attack is just absurdly efficient, but Barner's still set pretty low. I wouldn't necessarily say that he's splitting snaps at tight end. Like he's not really going to play like just this absurd amount, but he is playing the majority of the snaps. And then, Arroyo is getting kind of, I don't want to say cleanup duty or anything because they are just running two tight end sets for him. But I think that it's pretty obvious that the tight end one is Barner. Arroyo at some point, I would assume, is going to overtake him. He's just a bit too good, specifically receiving. But at the moment, that's not now. So I like Barner receiving yards on the over.
And all right, let's go, Mr. Eister. There's a guy by the JSN, is his nickname. He has all four limbs as he's reached that territory for you.
Yeah, I'm going to take the layup here. Leads the league in target share, leads the league in first read rate, leads the league in everything. On pace for the first 2,000-yard receiving yard season in history. Like, what else is there to say? And now we've added Rashid Shaheed, who's going to stretch the field even further and open up the middle of the field even more for JSN. You can just lock in 8 catches and 120 yards every single week this season. And I think the situation has actually improved with Shaheed. I certainly don't think he's losing target share to Shaheed. So you get Shaheed stretching the field, it just opens it up even more for JSN. The great matchup against Arizona as well. I don't know what else you want. It's a big number, 95.5, but it's too low.
AJ Barner. Want to get a little degenerative here? Plus 900 first touchdown, loving it. I hit one of those earlier this year, and it's just all about when you're on the field where it matters. I know it doesn't always work out that way, but he's playing over 90% of the snaps inside the 5 and inside the 10, and I love that role. Like you said, Bales, it is surprising. I didn't see this massive of a role coming, you know, in September. It wasn't really on my radar to this extent, but it's real, and they trust him, and they're going to go to him inside the five and inside the 10. So I think Barner's a great call across the board. Just for DFS here, and Keith, just to sweeten the pot here, and we're seeing almost 100 on the receiving prop line for JSN. To sweeten the pot here, the Cardinals are going to be without Will Johnson and Max Melton this Sunday. It was confirmed a couple hours ago. Boy, Jacoby Brissett, 4,600 on DK. I know it's a full slate. You got a couple of quarterbacks with 30-point ceilings. But hear me out. Jacoby Brissett, 4,600. Hell, at that price, you could play the guy naked if you really want to. Run it back with JSN. Now, if Brissett's going to be chalky, then I digress. But if no one's really going to play him, you know, on a huge slate, totally get it. I kind of like that pairing. Now, how long will this Marvin Harrison honeymoon phase like carry over? Was it solely because, you know, daddy wanted some targets to his kid, or, you know, are we going to see some more of this? Seattle is a little more healthy than Arizona is in the secondary, but I think JSN and company will put a lot of pressure on the Cardinals to move the ball. And Arizona is top five in the league in neutral pass rate too. So not quite gaping lane here because it is Jacoby Brissett, you know, but that being said, they're going to throw the ball regardless. So I think it's an interesting little stack. And if JSN is going to be chalky, Brissett could be a way to kind of get a little bit unique and kind of mitigate that. Or am I just taking crazy pills, Keith? I need your opinion.
I mean, he's going to be chucking it. I like the call a ton. It's a great Seattle defense. I think Seattle has a really good defense. But yeah. Game script, like, he's going to throw it 40-plus times, I think.
I don't think there's a more nervous coach in America right now than Gannon, because like he's putting his entire job on the line by rolling with Brissett. Kyler's not hurt. He doesn't need to be on IR. Everyone knows it. But if Brissett comes in, if they can keep this game, just keep the game close in Seattle. And I think it's a huge, huge win for this team.
I think devil's advocate, Jeff, is he was putting the job on his line, sticking with Kyler. I mean,
absolutely. And also, did you see the Cardinals? They lost by like a point, 2 points, 4 points. This team might be good. Like,
well, you know who? Period. Know who beat them in one of the most historic collapses of all time? Your Tennessee Titans.
That's true. Who are off the slate this week? No wonder why we're coming in under an hour.
Thank God.
Real quick, guys, DeAndre Swift did not practice today.
Did not practice.
Granted, it does say groin / personal, so I'm seems a little more iffy than if he just didn't.
Oh, no. But that sounds like a gaping lane tweet to me.
It sure does. It definitely does. Yeah. Oh, Swift didn't. I mean, I read that he did practice, so that's late.
He practiced yesterday for sure. I know that. Yeah. A full practice, so that's surprising.
All right.
Well, then to go back to your question, Jeff, give me Manungai by a nose then.
Yeah.
I mean, with the information we have.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Where are we? We are in San Francisco, where the Niners are at home. 4.5-point dogs to the Rams. 49.5 is the total. This is the one game that nobody really had an opinion heading into our chat here today. We all know that, you know, if Puka Nacua is on the field with his four limbs, I like every over imaginable. Here, I'll throw this out to you. I've been reading rumors that that the Rams, as they get, you know, Devontae Adams, you know, is a machine at the inside of the 10, that there's a concentrated effort by McVay, knowing that he can do whatever he wants, you know, in the red zone, theoretically. That he's letting Stafford like pad those stats for an MVP run. How about that? So do we like Stafford? What's Stafford's 1.5 total? It's minus money, I'm sure, but for touchdowns.
Yeah, I don't have that for me.
I'm looking. I'm talking out of my ass as I'm going here. But it's an idea that popped into my head. So let's see. It's player passing TDs. 2.5 is the line at FanDuel plus 136. Oh, that's a little juicy, huh? I don't know. Yeah, those
aren't even great odds on over.
No, I know. No,
that's pretty shocking.
It's asking a lot. All right. Well, so much for that idea. Anyone want to save me from my drowning here?
Well, that being said, his passing props are in the 260s here. You can see on the liveprops.com odds comparison tool, which is free, by the way. By the way, get on over to our YouTube channel. If you like what you hear, please give us a subscription so we can continue to give you some free shows every week. Had our first NBA show on Wednesday. It was awesome. Chaotic NBA slate. Here we are talking NFL every Friday. Get on over there, give our YouTube channel a subscription. It is much appreciated. Yeah, this is a tough game. I mean, the thing we do know about the Rams is we know where the volume's going. It's three guys, and Puka's looked incredible. And you're usually the "does Puka have limbs" guys. Do we bet him? You know, the thing about him is he just seems to can't make it three consecutive weeks without popping up on the injury report or something like that. It's a little tiring. The guy's amazing, but it's tiring. So I guess do you guys have any doubts about, like, discrete availability issues with Puka? Like is his snap share going to be uncapped? Keith, I'll throw it over to you. Do you have any reservations there?
I think he's just good enough that it doesn't matter. And I think we're getting a little bit of a discount on some of his numbers because of that. But yeah, it does seem like he's in the tent or in the locker room nearly every week, but it doesn't matter. He just ends up with 10 receptions and 100 yards every week anyway. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
His line's in the 90s. And when we were on the show before he came back for the Saints game, I said it then and I'll say it again. That was at least a good indicator of where we think his health is going to be. I mean, those are just massive numbers. So, I don't know, Bales, any thought on the Rams passing game here?
Yeah, I mean, the only like saving grace of it is that you know where it is going. Like Devonta Adams, the touchdown guy, and then Puka's kind of the elite receiver that gets whatever he wants. I don't love it because I don't love the matchup against San Fran for like as weird as their team has been, as like injured and just all over the place as everything's been. Their defense has been pretty good. And I don't know if I necessarily want to kind of deal with that and have to sweat it out on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, you can always convince me to play Puka. It's not going to take that much for me to be like, yeah, okay, like the guy's just better than everyone else and the system is designed for him. So I don't really have any issues with it. I just also wouldn't put it at like the top of my list of what I'm looking at.
49.5, very, very, very healthy game total, but there's a couple of really high game totals floating around this week. And maybe that's one people are going to pump the brakes on outside of Christian McCaffrey, who's rightfully extremely popular every week.
Speaking of McCaffrey, I mean, do we just play his receiving yards again? It's set at like right around 50. He's gone over in 8 of 9 games. The only game he didn't, he had 3 catches against Houston. And I think he still had like 42 yards or something. Like it was pretty close. Basically part receiver. I mean, his numbers, his volume's dropping because they're starting to get healthy again. I think he's had 5 targets in each of the last 2 games compared to like he was sitting at like 8 targets for a while. So like the volume is dropping, but you're still getting Christian McCaffrey one-on-one against safeties, linebackers, like just guys that aren't good enough to cover him. And I mean, the efficiency is still like through the roof and like you can't put a running back's receiving yards like above 50 at this point. Like you just can't set it high enough, really.
I like this game. I especially the McCaffrey thing you mentioned. I think it just feels like Shanahan and McVay, like they kind of enjoy playing each other. Like, I feel like they're two of the sharpest guys out there. It's a division game. You know, remember earlier in the year, the Niners went into Los Angeles with 0 healthy players and won. Remember 26-23? I think McVay's going to want to win this game. I think Shanahan's going to have to, like, I think this is one of those games where, like, your best players are getting the ball, right?
Yeah, we talked about McCaffrey on last week's show, and I ran the numbers. He's top 25, at least as of before last week, in target share amongst all players, let alone running backs in target percentage. I mean, the guy is just a bona fide weapon. Before we get too far out of the NFC West, if we could just quickly circle back, your guys' thoughts on some fairly breaking questionable news we have here. Cooper Kupp and Barner are now questionable for Sunday. Torrey Horton's doubtful. So we might see an extreme Rashid Shaheed role out the gate. And I mean, listen, it's really not that sophisticated of an offense. A lot of play action and running straight down the field. Shaheed's there for one reason. Straight fly patterns or post, baby. Open it up for JSN. But man, Seahawks fans might have thought they had Rashid Shaheed at home and Torrey Horton, and he was coming along really nicely, doing a nice job returning punts too. So man, that is going to be one very interesting injury report on Sunday. I'm hoping Barner plays. If he doesn't, Orojo's looked much better, and he's been more involved, I think, in like the last couple of months. So I think he's an interesting punt option for DFS as well.
The other Shahid thing, I guess, I don't know, bit of information, is that he played with Kubiak. Like, Kubiak went and got his guy. It's not like he doesn't need to learn an entire new offense. He knows it. I'm not saying that there's going to be like this instant chemistry. Like, obviously you need practice and whatnot, but it's like he can walk into that building and he'll tell you the offense. You know what I mean?
38.5 is the yardage prop on Shahid.
I know we have one more game to talk about, but since we're talking about Kubiak, it had me thinking about the Saints again. And another questionable tag was Alvin Kamara, who popped up this week too. Are we going to get to the point of this season again, which seems like we get to this point of the season every freaking year, where Taysom Hill gets back into the do-it-everything mode? Like, if he's on your waiver wire in your home league, he's just worth scooping because he might get that super cheat code boost of getting some red zone snaps again. I mean, like, the quarterback plays terrible. They have no one else to turn to. Kamara, you know, said he'd rather retire than play for someone else other than the Saints. I mean, he's clearly not the future. Taysom Hill's been back a month now, clearly healthier. Maybe we see his role expand a little bit here. I just think that's a punter's chance here. I don't know what his touchdown odds are or anything, but I just feel like we're at the Taysom Hill time part of the year again, where the Saints are terrible and they have no quarterback.
Stranger things have certainly happened. All right, let's wrap it up in Washington, where the cratering Commanders are 8.5-point underdogs at Detroit. Always 8.5. The visiting Lions, 48.5 total. Luch, get ready because I'm starting with you with Mr. St. Brown. You're all over it.
I'm on St. Brown. I mean, it's not really a sexy pick playing anybody from the Lions. I guess my biggest fear is game script, in that, you know, Detroit's up 3 touchdowns at halftime. You know, that being said, they look kind of vulnerable last week. So maybe there's a chance that the Commanders keep this a little bit close here. The Commanders just aren't defensively. They're giving up the most yards per target, 3rd highest yards after catch percentage in the league, and 2nd highest yards after contact per reception, meaning they're not wrapping up or tackling either when the guys are catching the ball, which is just screaming St. Brown slant game, middle of the field, easy throws for Jared Goff. That's my biggest concern. Will this game be competitive in the fourth quarter? I don't know the answer to that, but things didn't look foolproof last week either for the Lions. So I'm on St. Brown for sure.
Before I throw it over to you guys, the concern, of course, of a blowout is there. But this Lions team, after coming off of the loss last week and knowing how they've done what they've done in the past, I feel like they could be up 38-7 with 7 minutes in the fourth quarter, and Goff is like hitting Jameson Williams for like a 60-yarder. Like
that never happens this year. But
the idea being, I could see them like just not stopping. With that in mind, I'll throw it to you, Keith, if there's something that you see there.
I agree with both of the takes that have been thrown out, that the Lions, they're like, Dan Campbell is the guy that like got embarrassed last week in a game everyone thought they should have won, big, huge favorites. And he's just going to come out and be aggressive in this spot. So I'm completely with that take, and I'm completely with Luch's take on Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, Gibbs burned me last week. I was so in on that, thought it was a great spot. It's another big favorite spot for him, but I think I'm just sticking with St. Brown here. Really like the number on him. It's under 80, I think, still, which is – that just feels way too low for this spot. Luch touched on the Commander's defense just has been shredded here. Yeah, 79.5. 79.5 receiving yards is the St. Brown number. I think that looks great.
Yep. Bales?
Come in. I like Detroit's passing. I think if you want to take a shot on golf, feel free. Like, I also really like St. Brown, but, you know, as you literally just said, he can hit Jameson Williams for a 60, 80-yard touchdown, and, like, no one would blink twice at it. I want receivers against Washington. I'm cool with the quarterback against Washington. I think if I'm absolutely picking someone, I agree with Luch and Keith. I think it's Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think generally that's the response you should go with for Detroit. But Jameson Williams is sneaky, and he saw, like, a reasonable role last week. So I'm cool with either of them. I'm cool with Goff. I just think that the passing attack is going to take out Washington this week.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see him get in the end zone. I mean, they use the same guys inside the five and inside the 10. LaPorta's on the field 90% of the time inside the five. St. Brown, same exact rate. And Jameson Williams, 86% of the time inside the five, which is, you know, pretty surprising with how often they like to run the ball, especially kind of in the red zone and play that Dan Campbell smash mouth type of football. But, you know, it feels like another sneaky game where maybe he gets one of those jet sweep or end arounds inside the five and he can take it in. But good to see him get back on track just a week late after the OC said that he failed him. So maybe we're finally seeing a little bit of squeaky wheel stuff here with J-Mo.
Yep. All right. I'm going to send it around the horn with everyone's best bets. I'll start and Luch will take us out of here. I'm saying it's basically the best for last year. I really do love, I love St. Brown. I love Williams. I love LaPorta. I really think that the Lions come in and make a statement here. You know, actually before I'll just go with St. Brown as my favorite bet there, my best bet. Real quick though, if you have to choose one between St. Brown, Nacua, and JSN for DraftKings purposes, who do you pick this week?
Good question.
I have not looked at the receiver ownerships yet. So,
regardless of ownership,
just who scores the most fantasy points?
Yeah,
give me JSN.
Yeah, that's my pick too.
Yeah, me too. Especially since I like Jacoby Brissett.
All right. So that's me. We'll go with you, Keith. What's you take it from here for your best bet?
Let's see. Give me Travion Henderson over 21.5 receiving yards. Just sets up perfectly for him. Finally saw the bulk of the snaps, 75% of snaps last week. Gets a defense that has allowed the most receiving yards to backs in the entire league. Perfect spot. Has the workload. Travion's the play.
Mr. Bales?
Give me Rico Dowdle. I'll take 100+. You can probably get decent odds on that. I'll go 100+ rushing yards.
I like it. And lastly, but not leastly, Mr. Luch.
I like Jacoby Brissett because I like kind of doing a little two-leg SGP or maybe add on some more because they kind of correlate here. Give me Jacoby Brissett. That being said, the longer we're on the show, I am talking myself into putting some money on Taysom Hill to score a touchdown. I would like to see what Alvin Kamara's actual issue is. His ankle, questionable, but I would like that a lot more if he's out. I mean, they have Devin Neal and Audric Estime is floating around. Like, that's it. So if Kamara sits, there's a very real chance that you're looking at the inside the – if the Saints do have an opportunity inside the five on Sunday, it could be with Taysom Hill. So we'll see. I guess that's it. If you like this show, guys, please give us a follow and a subscription on our YouTube channel so we can keep giving you this awesome free content now twice a week, Football Fridays, and we got Hoops on Wednesdays, and hopefully we can keep bringing you some more new stuff each week. So stay tuned to props. We have a ton of content. It's NBA Cup Night. We have a ton of Hoops content on props. There's college football stuff up for Saturday, ton of NFL stuff for Sunday and Monday, and more is on the way. We also have UFC props. You name it, we got it over there at props.com. 100% free stuff. Get on over there and see what we're talking about. Plus, if you actually like reading Jeff's stuff, I'm just busting your chops here. awesome article. Jeff had a one-on-one interview with Jason Robbins from DraftKings over there, our sister site, ingame.com. Really good piece, Jeff. Really good stuff,
thank you,
man.
Thank you very much. Cool. I've been doing it for 30 years. You'd think I figured something out by now.
When you figure out the secret sauce of journalism, let me know because I need it as well. So for Jeff, Keith, and Justin, I am also Justin. Good luck this weekend, everybody, and thanks for tuning in.